The dumb show surrounding the scrolls is a tale of such priestcraft and degeneracy as to boggle the mind. Because the scrolls cannot be read and do not derive their sacred status from their textual intelligibility or lack of it, but as physical artifacts to be worshipped in their corporeal state, a fitting denouement for the heirs of golden calf worship, the rabbis supply the intelligibility by memorizing previous rabbinical interpretations and embellishments and adding them to the material object that constitutes the text of the scroll. The whole process of mutilating the scriptures and then leaving the decision on their reading and meaning to a priest caste of rabbis is perhaps the ultimate symbolic put-down of the Old Testament. Here it is necessary to reflect on the fact that Judaism does not in any way or manner entail the worship of Yahweh, the God of the Bible. Judaism's God is the Jewish people themselves, as embodied in their rabbis. Judaism is worship of Jewish blood in the person of the rabbi. The Jewish race itself is rendered God by this means. The dumb show surrounding how to read the Sefer Torah rolls illustrates this. In studying the Talmudic discussions concerning this issue, various schools of thought are advanced concerning the superior intelligibility of vowels versus consonants, or vice versa. Cf., for example, in the Talmud Sanhedrin 3b to 4b and Megillah 25b. The arcane mechanics of stresses, pauses, accents, glosses, omissions, and versifications are batted back and forth until an outsider looking at this farrago can only scratch his head in wonder at how any understanding of the text of the scrolls will ever be reached. And that's exactly the point. What is being taught in these Talmudic passages is not how to find the key to the mutilated Torah text, as presented in the scroll totems. Understanding the redacted biblical text is not the goal of the Talmudic lesson being imparted, but rather the indeterminacy of the written scriptures when viewed without the intervention of rabbinic dictation. The message Satan has been whispering in the ears of those imbued with the unclean Talmudic Kabbalistic spirit since this crowd first swarmed the glittering yellow-red statue of a calf and offered it obeisance is that the written text of the Old Testament is not sufficient. It is incomplete and lacking. Indeed, it is utterly incomprehensible and ultimately mute unless it is taught out of the mouth of the rabbis. The barely concealed message of the previously cited Talmudic discussions is that it is the rabbis and not the Bible who are the source of all godly gnosis, wisdom, and holiness. Judaism is the very theology of biblical nullification, exactly as Christ stated. It has evolved a system of scriptural nullification and rigidly codified it. The symbol of that nullification is the synagogue's idolatrous Torah scroll, which contains not the Old Testament scriptures, but a mockery of them, which have been suppressed and expurgated and rewritten to such an extent as to be made all but recognizable to everyone except the rabbis. The Talmud elucidates the core horror at the center of this heart of darkness by explaining that the falsification of Scripture is central to its understanding and that this system of falsification was secretly sanctioned by Moses. The Talmud in Nedarim 37b, 38a states, and I quote, "The vocalization of the scribes, the omissions of the scribes, and the Scripture words that are read but not written, and the Scripture passages that are written but not read, are practices revealed to Moses from Sinai." End quote. In other words, rabbinic tradition, claiming the sanction of Moses himself, decides how the Bible texts are read, which parts are suppressed or misrepresented, and what words from the oral tradition of the elders will be authoritatively promulgated. The presentation and meaning of the Bible text is thereby inextricably chained to rabbinic tradition. Judaism teaches that the key to the meaning of the Bible is not in the Bible itself. It resides exclusively in the secret lore of the rabbis. How different is this Judaic epistemology from that of Jesus Christ, who proclaimed that he had said nothing in secret? It is secrecy, priestcraft, occult superstition, and the personality cult of the rabbis which alone determines in Judaism how the scriptures will be manipulated. The Talmud itself admits that most of its endless rules and regulations have little scriptural basis, and that the oral tradition of the Mishnah supersedes the written laws of the scriptures. The Talmud states, the abolition of vows, called Kol Nidre, hovers in the air, for it has nothing in the Torah on which to depend. The laws of the Sabbath, festal offerings and sacrilege, lo, they are like mountains hanging by a string, for they have little scripture for many laws. Haggai 1:8, end quote. It is an interesting fact that what Christ termed heavy burdens, mountains, these Pharisees bind the people with are, by their own admission, hanging by a string when it comes to scriptural justification. And why Haggai 1:7-5, the Talmudic sage declares unambiguously the basis of the religion of the rabbis, quote, some teachings were handed on orally, and some things were handed on in writing. We conclude that the ones that are handed on orally are more precious, end quote. Hence, the Mishnah is believed to contain the revelations of Yahweh to Moses at Sinai. Yet, in the introduction to the Yale University English translation of the Mishnah, it is stated that, quote, the Mishnah is a document of imagination and fantasy, end quote, from the Mishnah, a new translation, New Haven, Connecticut, Yale University Press, 1998, Roman numeral 17 for page. That's page Roman numeral 17. Since God and Moses were not fantasists, this is a rather frank admission of the entirely man-made nature of the Mishnah Talmud. Quote, the Mishnah is remarkably indifferent to the Hebrew scriptures. The Mishnah is made up of the sayings bearing the names of authorities who lived in the late 1st and 2nd centuries, that is A.D. In fact, the Mishnah is a principal holy book of Judaism. The Mishnah has been and is now memorized in the circle of all those who participate in the religion Judaism. The two great documents formed around the Mishnah and so shaped as to serve in part as commentaries upon Mishnah, namely the Babylonian Talmud and the Palestinian Talmud, form the center of the curriculum of Judaism as a living religion. End quote from the Mishnah, a new translation, New Haven, Connecticut, pages Roman numeral 13 and Roman numeral 15. The Mishnah, then, is the wellspring of the man-made religion of Judaism, from which spout centuries of exegesis and never-ending additional rabbinical supplements, expansions, and expostulations in a huge compendium of Talmudic argumentation and commentaries upon commentaries that begins with the supplement to the Mishnah, the Tosefta. Because it is regarded by the rabbis as the supreme revelation of Sinai, having been passed down orally in secret across millennia, the Mishnah is a law unto itself, which does not need to claim a biblical basis for its authority. Therefore, one searches the Mishnah in vain for any significant repository of Bible quotes, references, or ideas. I quote now from Rabbi Jacob Neusner. On the surface, Scripture plays little role in the Mishnaic system. The Mishnah rarely cites a verse of Scripture, or refers to Scripture as an entity, links its own ideas to those of Scripture, or lays claim to originate in what Scripture has said, even by indirect or remote allusion to a scriptural verse of teaching. Formally, redactionally, and linguistically, the Mishnah stands in splendid isolation from Scripture. The Mishnah constitutes Torah. It, too, is a statement of revelation, Torah revealed to Moses at Sinai. But this part of Revelation has come down in a form different from the well-known written part of the Scripture. This tradition truly deserves the name tradition, because for a long time it was handed down orally, not in writing, until given the written formulation now before us in the Mishnah. Since some of the named authorities in the chain of tradition appear throughout the materials of the Mishnah, the claim is that what these people say comes to them from Sinai through the processes of Kabbalah and Masoret, handing down traditioning. So the reason that the Mishnah does not cite Scripture is that it does not have to. And quote from the Mishnah, a new translation, New Haven, Connecticut, Yale University Press, Roman numeral pages 35 and Roman numeral pages 36. From this statement of Rabbi Neusner, we deduce that the Mishnah was the autonomous oral tradition that existed in the time of Christ and to which Jesus made direct and accurate reference to as the tradition of the elders. Moreover, Neusner alludes to the Kabbalah, the Jewish book of secret satanic teachings, as the process by which the Mishnah was transmitted. This Kabbalah arose in Babylon, as did the initial texts of the Talmud, and both are heavily influenced by the abominable occult practices and superstitions of Babylon. One manifestation of this superstition is found in Judaism's self-worship. In Judaism, the rabbi is the Torah incarnate. He actualizes this divine status through memorization and vain repetition of the Talmud and Talmudic interpretations of the Tanakh in a manner similar to the Eastern religions and the importance they attach to mantric incantations. The Talmud mantra gives the rabbi supernatural power in his mind, and his intrinsic superiority and divinity is made manifest by this means. He himself now becomes an object of worship, like the scroll, because having achieved his full manifestation as the incarnate Torah, he himself becomes the main source of Jewish salvation. Talmud B. Barakat 8a has God declare, quote, "If a man occupies himself with the study of Torah, works of charity, and prays with the community, I account it to him as if he had redeemed me and my children from among the nations of the world," end quote. Now remember, when Talmud refers to Torah, it is referring to itself, not to the Old Testament. And what it is talking about here is the empty salvation offered by the religion of Judaism in the wake of the rejection and crucifixion of the Messiah and the destruction of the temple which the Messiah prophesied. Having rejected him, the Jewish leadership became more corrupt than ever, and out of this corruption came the fully institutionalized nullification of the Old Testament Tanakh and its replacement by Talmudic self-worship. The totemic, pagan, Babylonian root of this process of self-idolatry is hinted at by the fact of the rabbi's object orientation rather than his spiritual orientation. It is not the rabbi's understanding and grasp of the Bible that makes him a veritable incarnate God, but rather his rote memorization and repetition of the material object, i.e., the Talmudic texts themselves, because, quote, "the Babylonian Talmud represents God in the flesh," end quote, from Rabbi Jacob Neusner, Rabbinic Judaism, page 62. Hence, The authority of the Mishnah is derived from the authority of the rabbi, because whatever the rabbi declares to be from Sinai is from Sinai, because the rabbi is Sinai incarnate. This circular reasoning is a fixture of the Jewish mentality today, when in so many debates and controversies, opposition is silenced simply by Jewish insistence on their own dogmatic certainty and authority, after which the case is closed, and to proceed further would entail rank anti-Semitism. Since the Mishnah stands alone as an authority without justification biblically, it fell to the later rabbinical writings of the Talmud, such as the Sifra, which do comment upon Scripture, to correlate Mishnaic teachings with those of the Tanakh, that is to say, the Pentateuch and certain other sections of the Old Testament. In considering all of this, we may call to mind the situation of the Christian ecclesia today, which is occupied by those who are so utterly smitten from the Pope on down to the lowliest street corner, four-square, holy roller preacher, with the presumed authority, biblical knowledge, and wisdom of the rabbis. Cast off to the sidelines are the marginal Christians who refuse any authority but the Bible, sola scriptura, and are castigated as extremists and haters by their erstwhile pastors and priests. Their attendance at almost any modern church is a source of scandal and embarrassment, and such Bible-true Christians exist largely in house churches and other small gatherings sprinkled across the countryside. They have been thrown out and cast off. This is so because the religion of Christianity has, to a large extent, been taken over by the religion of Judaism, and become a fossil more properly distinguished as Judeo-Churchianity. It is most interesting to compare the situation in the modern churches with a passage from the Talmud. Quote, "There was a certain Gentile who came before Shammai. He said to him, 'How many Torahs do you have?' He replied, 2, one in writing, one memorized. He said to him, 'As to the one in writing, I believe you. As to the memorized one, I do not believe you. Convert me on condition that you will teach me only the Torah that is in writing.'" And the Talmud concludes by saying, "He rebuked him and threw him out." B. Shabbat 31a. Rabbi Nathan, XV, V.1. True Christians have also been thrown out of the ecclesia, for insisting on sola scriptura. Such is the state of the church today. This is Michael A. Hoffman II. This concludes this portion of my study on the religion of Judaism in support of my thesis that Judaism is a religion that was concocted after Israel's rejection of its Messiah in A.D. 33, and that it is not the religion of the Old Testament. You can reach me at P.O. Box 849, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83816. Thank you for joining me today.